Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. It's the middle of lockdown, although actually nearing the end of lockdown due to recent announcements.
Depending on how it goes, the lockdown will be maybe over in the next 2 or 3 months. We'll see. But we don't know how it's going to go. It's recording it. It's the end of June. It's our first episode we've recorded since March. So the last episode we recorded was actually a week before lockdown. So
Jack and I aren't in each other's houses, by the way. We're not in the same space.
And we're not socially distanced recording as well. We're not in a field somewhere, even though all that would be pretty impressive.
Our sound recording quality has just gone through the roof in terms of standards. We are doing this over Skype, so please excuse any sound defaults or any particular mistakes, should there be any. Hopefully there won't be, but just on the off chance. Jack, how's everything been with you?
It's been fine. Everything's going okay. I'm still working from home, luckily. I'm able to keep safe. I'm taking all precautions, as you should. So,
as expected, yeah.
I've not been attending any of those secret lockdown raves.
Were there actually? Do you think there were that many of them, or do you think that was more of a media exaggeration?
There's been a few which were caught. Have been caught due to the power of social media.
Sure.
But as to how many there were, I don't actually know. I think it's more likely there's been multiple small breaches than large parties, but we never know, really. Depends on what gets caught.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. For sure. So, on that note, and on a completely different topic, in this episode, we are doing a mystery pitch.
Yep.
And Jack, would you like to reveal who that mystery pitch is centered around?
Yeah, we've decided to do our mystery pitch themed around Disney's former CEO but still current chairman, Bob Iger.
Bob Iger.
Mainly because I've had an idea for 3 months and I want to use it before it causes me to combust.
And now we're doing it. Now we're finally getting around to the Bob Iger mystery pitch.
Yeah. Here we go. I've been looking forward to this.
So, without further ado, welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. And now for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defense Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer, a podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force in our latest Skype mystery pitch.
Yeah.
So, as my wonderful co-host Jack announced before the opening titles, this one is specializing in mystery pitch Bob Iger, which Jack has been very excited about for a long, long time.
Okay.
So, Jack, shall we get straight to it? Do you want to go first, or shall I?
Yeah, I'll go first before I combust.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
I mean, so should I prepare anything in advance? Like, just so I can brace myself? Yeah.
I don't know. But okay, so here we go. So, this is a bit of a meta one, similar to our film pitch, our film industry mystery pitch one. So, it's a meta one.
Interesting.
The year is 2022. And Bob Iger decides he wants to direct one film before he truly retires. He's risen through the ranks. He started off as a weatherman, ended up as a CEO of Disney and chairman, and he wants to do one film before he truly can retire, because he gets an itch. And he wants to direct a film based on the relationship between Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
Between Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
And okay, but that's not all. In lockdown, Daniel Day-Lewis completes Disney Plus. He watches the whole thing.
Okay.
He turns out he's been a big Disney fan, but Disney Plus allows him to fill in the gaps and complete it. And he's very keen to work with Mr. Iger. So Mr. Iger casts him as Bill Clinton and casts Will Smith as Obama.
But okay. Uh-huh.
Production runs into trouble because Daniel Day-Lewis he's not as method as he once was, but he's still proper. But he only refers to Will Smith as William Smith. This causes a lot of tension on set, which results in Will Smith decking Daniel Day-Lewis on set and knocking him out. That's my mystery pitch.
I mean, are you sure that's not the pitch right there? Like, no, that's the whole thing. Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
Yes, you got a lot to work with.
Yeah. Wish me luck. Okay.
Luck.
Right. So. Okay. So, a film about Daniel Day-Lewis as Clinton and Will Smith as Barack Obama and everything that happens in between, all the production issues on set.
Yeah.
And okay. Right. Okay. Here we go. So. I'm going to take this back a little bit earlier.
Yeah, good.
So Bob Iger was thinking about all the different films he'd like to develop. Like you said, he's been thinking about this for a while, but given it's 2022 and he's about to retire, he agrees now is the time to do it. It's now or never. So his first pitch, his first idea, which he takes to the other executives and the board of Disney, is a film about his time as a weatherman. Yeah, so it's almost like a biography at the start of his career.
Okay.
Called It's Raining Men. So it basically with the entire with all the Spice Girls as himself. So they all play. It's a bit like the Pixar film. What's the Pixar film with all the emotions again?
Inside Out.
Inside Out. That's it. Yeah. So it's a bit like Inside Out, but then all the different Spice Girls are Bob Iger's different emotions throughout his sort of turbulent starting career as a weatherman.
Okay.
So he pitches that first, and that doesn't go to plan. And then so he's rumbling about ideas. He's thinking about, he thinks about like the land before time, but then basically everyone's a clock instead of a dinosaur. he thinks about pitching Drumming for Dummies, but it's a biography of Bongos Bingo, the bingo nightclub. He thinks about pitching the story of the Oxford Dictionary, except like literally just to do a one that's better than the one that Mel Gibson tried to make. And okay, so yeah, so he thinks about all these ideas, and none of them seem to cut the mustard.
Okay.
So he, so he thinks, okay, why don't I produce a film that has more meaning, that has more substance, and that has some world-class Academy Award-winning actors in it. So he thinks, you know, a really interesting, substantial story would be the relationship between, like you said, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. So like everything you described beforehand, he casts Daniel Day-Lewis as Bill Clinton and Will Smith as Barack Obama. And so in the layout that you just said, Daniel Day-Lewis knocks out Will Smith, or vice versa.
Will Smith knocks out Daniel Day-Lewis.
Okay, so basically, okay, so Will Smith knocks out Daniel Day-Lewis, and then Bob Iger, who's currently assisted by Jerry Bruckheimer, the producer of Action Producers, rushes on set and says, "Whoa, Will, what are you doing?" And then it turns out the reason why Gemini Man didn't do so well at the box office was because it was falsely labeled as a true story. It was incorrectly labeled as not being a true story. So Gemini Man's revealed to be a true story, and it's actually like another Will Smith that does it. So then, Will Smith, the real Will Smith, the original Will Smith, suddenly parachutes onto the set, and he says, "Okay, guys, we're ready to start. Like, what are we waiting for?" And then everyone looks up and then realizes that it was the other Will Smith. So then the two Will Smiths start fighting, and they film Gemini Man 2, The Making of the Gemini Men. Jerry Bruckheimer tries to release that separately. So that whole shebang happens. And then Bob Iger says, "Well, what are we going to do? We still need to make a film about Bill Clinton and Barack Obama." So Daniel Day-Lewis wakes up from being knocked out and says, "I've got an idea. We produce a song to raise funds," because they've gone like, you know, $150-200 million over budget by now, mainly due to the whole set being destroyed by the two Will Smiths fighting. So yes, the two Will Smiths are still fighting, and they need to raise money. So Daniel Day-Lewis says, "Why don't we produce a song, like a Christmas single, to raise money for it?" And so it goes, who lives in a White House under the sea, William Clinton. And then the whole SpongeBob song about Bill Clinton. So then, yeah, they produce that. And then, yeah, then Simon Cowell gets really angry and Rage Against the Machine get really angry. And so Rage Against the Machine, in an unexpected twist of events, team up with Simon Cowell to release Bills on Parade, which is basically like the counter single. So both of these raise, so like both Bills on Parade and Who Lives in a White House Under the Sea, they both raise, about $200 million in total. So Jerry Bruckheimer and Bob Iger then approach Simon Cowell and say, look, this is getting ridiculous. Why don't we use this, use the funds raised from this to make a film together, and then you can have a part in the film. And Simon Cowell, who's sort of reminiscing of the days where he was like a production assistant on The Shining, thinks, yeah, you know what? That's a really good idea. That's a really nice...
Did he work on The Shining?
Supposedly, yeah.
Wow.
I think, yeah, there's a rumor that he had a very minor role on it, so in some kind of production capacity.
That's excellent. I like that. That's
like, yeah,
that.
Did you not hear that before?
No.
Oh, fair. I think it's on his Wikipedia page.
Wow.
I'm not mistaken. So Simon Cowell reminiscing over the Shining days, or day, we're not sure how long he was on set for, he suddenly says, let's do it. So, Bob Iger says, okay, well, how are we going to find a way to put you into it, given that everyone knows you as Simon Cowell and no one else? So then Bob Iger then goes away, he talks to his family, he comes up with ideas, and he says, I've got an idea. Why don't we call it the Obama Factor? So it's basically an alternate reality where Obama auditions for the X Factor or American Idol. Yeah, it's America, so it'll be American Idol. So Obama's auditioning, and then he meets Bill Clinton in the auditions as well.
Oh, okay.
And then Simon Cowell says, you know what, you guys have both really good voices. So you can either form a really wonderful career as audiobook narrators, or you can, you should choose to form a duo. So they basically, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton basically become the new Jedward. that iconic duo from, what was it, like 2007 or something?
Yeah, it was definitely something like that.
At least like 15 years ago or so. And so they become the new Jedward. What did they call them? 2009, okay, sure. So yeah, they're like, Barack Wood or Bill Wood or whatever. So they become a hit sensation. And then while they're doing that, that inspires Simon Cowell to run for the White House. So Simon Cowell runs for President of the United States of America as a... what party does he run with, Jack? He doesn't run with the Republicans or the Democrats. He's a libertarian. And that's an alternate reality where Simon Cowell asks... who is Aleppo?
Gary Johnson.
Yeah, like instead of Gary Johnson, Simon Cowell asks that live on air, but he still wins the presidency. So Obama and Clinton are currently touring, and then like the Nazis come back because that's a thing, and they start to wage war against America. So they're waging war against America, and so Simon Cowell's in charge, and he has to like figure out how they're gonna fight back against the Nazis. I'm literally trying to think about where this is going. So then Clinton and Obama have to sing a charming musical number to hit the reincarnated Hitler. To convince him to basically call off the attacks. So Obama and Clinton end up singing Springtime for Hitler in Germany, you know, the Mel Brooks song. And then at the same time, you know, like Rage Against the Machine come back and say like, hey, you know, you can't produce a more popular song than us. So then they perform a song called Go Hitler Radio, or
it's an anti-Nazi song then.
It's an anti-Nazi song.
Because they could do a collaboration with Obama instead of Bomb Track. It's Obam Track.
Obam Track, nice. You know, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so they perform that, and then Hitler's like, you know what? I'm gonna call off the attacks. You know, we don't need the US. It's fine. So that happens, and then, and then they go back to the White House, and Simon Cowell's like, I don't know how to thank you. You know, what can I possibly do to repay you? And then Rage Against the Machine and Obama would, or whatever their duo is called, Obama's elf, they say, well, you know, as a thank you, you know, we would all like to become, you know, joint collective president of the US. So Simon Cowell's like, yeah, you know what, that's a great idea. I'm going to go back to reality TV. So he disappears. There's about six presidents at the moment. And this is like a 4-hour film. It's longer than like The Dark Knight Rises on card. It's longer than The Snyder Cut. It's long. It's the most ambitious film of its time. And Jerry Bruckheimer's like, you know, like, Mr. Iger, you know, we should like, this is so long already. And then Bob Iger's like, no, we have to keep on going. I mean, this is my magnum opus. This is like, you know, by the end of it, I'm going to take all the, you know, every single bit of content off Disney Plus and then make this, it's all going to be this. Bob Iger ends up taking everything off Disney Plus and replacing it with a 365-day long series about how Rage Against the Machine, Bill Clinton, and Obama all became presidents of the US. and it's very well received. There's a great scene where basically like the two Will Smiths are still fighting, and then they end up accidentally rolling in, because like they're still fighting this whole time, and then they end up rolling into Mark Kermode's house, and they all have a brawl over Mark Kermode's dining room table, and this all happens, and then so that forms a second like kind of spin-off sequel to see it called like Who's Will Smith Fighting This Time, where it just follows like the two Will Smiths fighting various people. Anyone who's deemed an enemy of Bob Iger, that is. And it's all fun and smiles and rainbows, and Bob Iger earns, you know, it's the first film to pass $5 billion at the box office. Because it's the only Disney film that anyone ever watches. And like every single person on the face of the earth watches it. And the population of the earth by 2022 is like 12 billion, let's say. And yeah. Wow. And that's my movie.
That's impressive. Okay.
So right. How would you do it, Jack?
Okay, so it starts off, so it's 2022. At this moment in time, Bob Iger, right, his last year of chairman, he decides to divert 100 quid from Disney's budget sneak clean to his own project, signs off on it himself, and because he's still chairman, no one could stop him. So as soon as he steps down, hands full power to Chapek and who else is on the board, he just decides to write. I'm leaving as chairman, but as my last act, I'm going to give myself a fun, stupid film. And everyone's like, sure, like, we can't undo the last act of chairman. Okay. But also, at the same time, Joe Biden becomes president and grants annual leave laws. But more on that later. He gets it, yeah. So, Iger decides to... Well, he's musing on different ideas. He has lots of different ideas. He plans on he's thinking of multiple different projects. One of them is a remake of Goodfellas, and he decides, no, I'm not going to do that. Actually, I'm not going to touch it. He decides to direct a film called Martin Scorsese versus the World, where Martin Scorsese has to fight a different country, a different icon for a different country. But then he decides, no, I don't want to do that.
Is he fighting the Eighth Wonders of the World?
Yeah, and then he's looking through old YouTube videos, and he sees Bill Clinton's speech in the 2012 Democratic Conference where he confirms his support for Obama, and he goes, do you know what? There's never been a film about the Clinton-Obama relationship, and it's going to be a long 2.5-hour epic. It's about Bill and Hillary's relationship with Obama. He says, you know what? I'm going to do this. So he hires... is it Eric Roth? The Forrest Gump? Is it Eric Roth?
Yeah, Eric Roth, yeah.
So he thinks he's going to hire Eric Roth, but he accidentally hires Tim Roth by accident. Turns out Tim Roth is actually a great screenwriter and bangs out a 2.5-hour epic. And it's like, wow, this is unexpected.
Nice.
And in it, so yeah, so Brad Pang is together, and this project gets a lot of wind. So Tim Roth said he's not going to... Because, of course, Bob Iger offers Tim Roth the Clinton role. And he's I don't want to do it, but I want to be the first assistant director. And he's like, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that gets involved. So then he's thinking of a cast. Will Smith is his first choice for Obama, gets it. Viola Davis as Michelle gets it. But then Daniel Day-Lewis gets wind of a project. And it turns out during lockdown, Daniel Day-Lewis finished all of Disney Plus. It turns out he's a secret Disney fan. Disney Plus allowed him to fill in all the blanks. Boom, he finished it. And so Bob Iger gets a call one day during his 5 a.m. wake up, and it turns out to be Daniel Day-Lewis. And Daniel Day-Lewis is like, I'll play Clinton for you. I'll do it for you. And Iger's like, how did you get wind of this project? And he's like, well, you're in retirement. And it turns out Daniel Day-Lewis is living in this secluded cave atop of a Himalayan mountain.
Okay.
And a generator which he has to power through cycling every day. And yeah, and he says, no, I'll do it. So they go up to the mountain, get Daniel Day-Lewis to come down, and it turns out Daniel Day-Lewis is like, I'll do it, but look, I'm not that into method act anymore. It's too much effort, to be honest. It turns out there's like a dilemma, which also open for a spin-off, where there's a problem on the set of Lincoln, and Daniel Day-Lewis gets stuck in character as Lincoln, and he has to try to traverse modern life as Lincoln. He's like, Joe, I was too stressed, I'm not going to do it again. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to play Clinton, and Charlize Theron gets cast as Hillary as well. Casting that shocks many people. Some of the people are like, well, it's Charlize Theron, she can do what she wants. So, but the problem is, Daniel Day-Lewis, being the proper thespian he insists on calling Will Smith William Smith, and this really aggravates Will. So, of course, every scene that happens, they nail it. They absolutely nail it, but Will Smith is, he's like, Dan, he's like, Daniel, he's like, nope, Daniel, he's like, Mr. Day-Lewis, just stop calling me William, it's Will. And he's like, no, I'm sorry, but William's on your birth certificate, I've seen it. He just pulls out Will Smith's birth certificate, it's like, what?
And whoa.
It's William, I'm going to call you William. So this gets to a head. So backstage, they get into a heated argument, and Daniel Day-Lewis says, William, calm down, and Smith just knocks him out, and he goes flying, and he falls through the stage, and falls off the stage, and is knocked out unconscious. And the production is halted. This causes a lot of anxiety in Joe Biden, because Joe Biden booked all his annual leave so he can play himself in the film. So Joe Biden...
He's just adamant to play himself.
Yeah, so Joe and Jill Biden are playing themselves, and they're getting anxious because they know Joe's annual leave's coming to an end soon, and he needs to get back to running the country. And so they had... But Daniel Day-Lewis is obviously shocked, and he's very reluctant to return to production, and he goes missing. So then they have to go find him. So they hire a hunter, played by James Hetfield, to go find him, and eventually they find him.
Excellent casting choice.
Yeah, and also Seek and Destroy by Metallica's playing during a montage of James Hetfield looking for him. Like, he's looking under the shoebox, looking in cupboards.
Under the carpets, yeah.
Yeah, looking under the carpet, behind the closed doors, and he finds and he finds Daniel Day-Lewis in the crowd for a Dave Chappelle live concert. He's just been hiding in the audience the whole time. And he pulls him out, and he convinces him to do the show again, so finish it. So, but there's a lot of tension set, but it turns to the advantage, because there's quite tense scenes, are luckily all in that order, so it adds to the scenes. And Bob Iger's having a bit of a crisis here, because he's like, what am I doing? Am I exploiting these people? I need to make them up. So he invites them to an Italian restaurant for dinner, they have a chat, and it turns out they make up. And then it turns out they end up sharing a plate of spaghetti, and then in True Lady of the Tramp style, Will Smith and Daniel Day-Lewis kiss.
Wow.
And they end up falling in love and running away with each other, running away. So the promo tour is doing a film, and everyone's doing the press, and Joe Biden's having to do it after hours, but no one can find Daniel Day-Lewis and Will Smith.
Because they've just eloped somewhere.
Somewhere. And when the premiere's gone, they're not there. The Oscars, they both sweeps the board. Iger wins Best Director, but they're nowhere to be found. It turns out they're eventually spotted. It turns out they've been running a microbrewery in Shrewsbury this whole time.
Specifically Shrewsbury.
Yeah, it's called the Fresh Pints of Bel-Air.
Nice.
I know, that's so bad.
A lot of time for that.
I travels in, and it turns out there's a special home brew called There Will Be Booze.
That's great. Oh, I love it.
And they're like, what happened? And they're like, oh, the whole elope thing was just an act. But we realised during the conversation, our true passion isn't acting, it's microbreweries. So they're left of their own devices. And it turns out that obviously Jada Pinkett Smith and Daniel Lewis's wife and family, they were all in it the whole time. And you see like
Jada cleaning
up pint glasses in the background and doesn't even just look to the camera and just walks off.
Yeah, it's a family business.
Yeah, and it turns out that this microbrew ends up expanding and it becomes like an absolute rival to Weatherspoons.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
It ends with a showdown where Tim Martin has to fight Will Smith in the Shadow Realm.
Sure.
It ends up being, and yeah, Will Smith wins, but Tim Martin, at the end of his film, agrees to treat his staff better, and that's how it ends.
Oh, so it has an educational and moral dimension to it as well.
And so Will Smith and Daniel Lewis, they still run this little pub together, they're having a great time, and it just, and it all goes, and everything, Iger's, which finally retires, knowing he's done his one film, and it for a directorial debut to win Best Film and Director with all four actors as well, he thinks, that, you know what, I'm going to end on a high. So he turns down the opportunity to direct Toy Story 5. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And Tom Hanks does end up directing Toy Story 5, and it leaves open for a spin-off or Netflix series, or Disney Plus series, sorry. But and that's how it ends. Everyone turns out happy in the end.
And it's everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Nice. That was really, really good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that pitch, Jack.
No problem. So I'm looking forward to yours then.
All right. So, Jack, yours is... Okay, mine's nowhere near as detailed, just bearing that in mind, but it provides a lot of space for, you know, interpretation, shall we say.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. So, Bob Iger, again, one of his final acts as chairman of the Walt Disney Company, commissions... a whole franchise on Mary Berry. But like, not just one film, not like a biography, just a whole Mary Berry franchise of whatever that contains. So, Jack, what happens when Bob Iger commissions the Mary Berry franchise?
Okay, so the film starts where Bob Iger, he takes advantage and buys the BBC. He buys the BBC. And this opens a lot of weird crossover opportunities. For some are logical, like, you get a Doctor Who crossover where Doctor Who can interact with Jack Sparrow in this one episode, and there's a different episode where he interacts with different Disney characters. But Bob Iger, it turns out, through some weird contract, he now owns the life rights to the Mary Berry story. And it turns out, and he goes to speak, and Bob Iger travels to speak to Mary Berry. Mary Berry's like, right, I need to... Look, you can do some films. Look, I'll do another cuckoo show for you. And Bob Iger's like, no, I want you to do a film. I want to do a film about your life. And it turns out that Mary Berry fought in Vietnam. No one had ever heard of this before, but it turned out that Mary Berry fought for the Americans in Vietnam. And he's like, what? And she's like, look, now's the time that my story will be told through film. And she's like, on the condition you get Oliver Stone to direct.
Sure.
And so Oliver Stone, they open the door, and turns out they have to fight, and then they have to go find Oliver Stone. And Oliver Stone, he opens the door, he's wearing a Great British Bake Off t-shirt. Turns out he's a massive fan of it. So then he's like, right, I'm in. And they pitch him the idea, and he's like, I'm in. And so production of the film goes, and they have some very interesting casting. So in absolute stunt casting, Meghan Markle is cast as Mary Berry.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, Meghan Markle was cast. Mary Berry, and it's the film itself is called We Were Bakers. It says We Were Soldiers. It's called We Were Bakers.
Nice.
Or maybe Full Metal Baking Tray. I don't know, but it turns out Mary Berry, she was a camp cook for the Americans. She was a chef, but she was also a black ops soldier. So she would do her cooking by day, then go on these weird covert missions at night.
Was her mission name John Bake?
And it turns out that Paul Hollywood's father also fought in Vietnam. And no, Paul Hollywood's uncle. And Paul Hollywood's uncle is like sacrificed himself to save Mary Berry. And he says, look after my nephew. So that's why Mary Berry's always been very protective of Paul Hollywood, because she's got this deep family history that no one knows about.
Fair, sure.
And so he decides, but then he decides to do lots of different films, because it turns out that Mary Berry's been a secret tactician the whole time. And so you see her like advising on the Desert Storm while taking up a souffle.
Nice.
And so Bob, like, he becomes. And then there's a clash between Iger and Berry, because it turns out Iger starts taking more artistic license of each project. And there's a scene where Mary Berry single-handedly surfs into a town and defeats a whole load of terrorists. And she's like, that never happened, sorry. I can take a little bit here and there. And it spills into a whole court case.
Okay.
And so it's Berry versus Disney plus the BBC. and in this crossover, you can see Iger doing all these weird crossovers, like Vicar Dibley, Prison Break. you know, you can have like really random crossovers, like you have The Walking Dead meets Holby City.
Yeah.
And, like, you have like The Casualty, where The Casualty crew, they go over and have to treat a young Jack Bauer or something like that. So
Top Gear is presented by like Michelle Rodriguez, Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. But no, and it turns out that Iger goes, right, he actually throws away the case halfway through. He's like, look, I'm sorry, but Mary Berry wins. And she's like, what? And she's like, no, sorry, I let passion for filmmaking get in the way. I should have told your story true. This is disrespectful, I'm sorry. And so because of that, then he agrees to remake. He still releases the film, but agrees to other remakes as well. So he basically, you know, like Hitchcock remade his own The Man I Knew Too Much. So he just basically he personally directs all these other films.
Oh, so, interesting. Okay.
So Iger's just ends up directing loads of Mary Berry films just to fulfill her wish, and then the film ends with them both sailing off together to the Undying Lands, like the end of Return of the King.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's quite sweet, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Nice. Is that it? Or
yeah, that's it. Really, I can't.
I mean, it was great.
I think I'd call the film Who Do You Think I Gar? Or something.
Who do you think I Gar? Like, nothing to do with Mary Berry.
Yeah.
love it. Nice. That's really good. Like,
Carry On Berry or Berry On Camping or something? Berry On Filmmaking or something?
Campy, yeah. Oh, what else is there?
So, your turn.
Is the soundtrack by Berry Tomorrow?
Oh my god, that'd be incredible.
But just, you know, Mary Berry Tomorrow.
Yeah.
nice. Okay, so in my one, that was really good, by the way, Jack. I really enjoyed that. So my one is casting the former Prince Harry as Mary Berry. So basically, Bob Iger, as expected, becomes a huge fan of the Great British Bake Off, and he's particularly compelled by the charm and the wit and the wisdom and the skills of Mary Berry. So he thinks, who is this majestic, beautiful wizard who is conjuring up some, you know, such fine, exquisite confectionery and cake? So he says, yeah, we need to make a film about her. So he's looking for a whole range of people who could play Mary Berry. He looks, of both genders. He looks, Sir Ian McKellen. He looks at Michael Gambon. He looks at Daniel Day-Lewis. he looks at Dame Judi Dench. He thinks about Maggie Smith. He thinks Maggie Smith would make an excellent Mary Berry. So he casts Maggie Smith. He walks onto the set the first day and he says, okay, so hi, Maggie. I'm Bob. Really, really, you know, love your work. Yeah, Professor McGonagall absolutely, killed it. We don't really have a script for the film just yet, but we want to start shooting. So can you just, think about what Mary Berry would say and how she'd act and just roll with that? So she says, okay, got it. And then she basically points, she, all of a sudden she pulls out a spatula when the cameras are rolling, points it at, who else is cast in the film? Points at John Cleese. but yeah, points at John Cleese and says, Expecto Patronum. So, yeah, so all of a sudden, you know, unbeknownst to everyone else on set, John Cleese turns into a, a cake in the shape of the Black Pearl. And then Bob Iger's like, cut, cut, cut. Like, what are you doing? And then Maggie Smith says, well, I mean, I'm just, yeah, you know, that's the kind of thing that Mary Berry would do. She would, you know, turn people into cake, and I'm magic, so I, like, why can't I do that? And Bob Iger's like, I mean, wait, so you're actually Professor McGonagall? And she says, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, I thought everyone knew that. And then they're like, oh, okay, well, fair enough, fair enough. And then so they carry on filming, and then, you know, they sort of film, like, you know, 3 hours worth of what, you know, what Maggie Smith thinks Mary Berry would do. And then basically, another referendum happens in the UK, and like an undisclosed referendum, you know, it doesn't reveal what it is. And then Maggie Smith suddenly gets really angry because her side lost. So she goes around, like, turning, you know, loads of politicians into cakes, because she's like, well, this is what Mary Berry would do, so I'm going to do it too. So she basically just, you know, so Maggie Smith flies around the UK turning, like, Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer and, yeah, all into, you know, all into cakes and like, you know, and gingerbread houses and all sorts. And yeah, and so Bob Iger's like, well, you know, what are we going to do? You know, Maggie Smith's on the loose. So he gets, who does Bob Iger enlist? Meanwhile, the cameras are rolling as well. So the Mary Berry franchise kind of becomes a bit of a, like, a documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, it becomes a documentary of, Iger chasing down Maggie Smith. And then, because it's a really good documentary, HBO basically says, okay, hey, Disney, this is a really interesting documentary. I think that's probably award worthy. So we're going to pay you $10 billion to buy it off you. So Disney thinks, yeah, sure, you know, we can win back, like, you know, a fifth of the money that we paid Fox for. So they accept it, and then the documentary is bought. And then Bob Iger's like, well, this is a franchise, so we have to make a second one. So what happens is, so it's basically, it's an adaptation of Mary Berry's book, Mary Berry Cooks the Perfect, step by step. So, again, so Maggie Smith is also playing Mary Berry. So she, what does she do? So Bob Iger tells Maggie Smith in advance they're adapting step by step. Cooking the Perfect step by step. And so, but then Maggie Smith misinterprets that as cooking steps by steps. So she basically uses her magic to round up the five members of the former pop sensation Steps. And then basically just tries to turn them all into confectionery. And so Bob Iger then has to sort of run in again and then, you know, stop her and, like, Maggie, no, what are you doing? And then Maggie's like, what do you mean? Like, you know, I'm cooking the perfect steps by steps. So Bob Iger manages to stop them. And then the filming of that becomes the second one. So now they get on to filming the third one. And the third one, it is... So the third one is an adaptation of Mary Berry's book, Cooking a Feast. Cook Up a Feast, that's what it's called. But then she, again, Maggie Smith, misinterprets that as cooking up the Feast franchise. You're the horror film Feast. So she basically rounds up every single DVD copy of Feast and starts like cooking them. And so Bob Iger walks in with a camera and he's like, "Yo, Mary, like this smells disgusting. Like, why are you like burning all these DVDs?" And she's just like, "Yeah, I mean," she says, "Well, I'm cooking up a feast here." Yeah, and then so they're filming that, and then that's all stopped, and then they go into the fourth one, which is they film a Jamie Oliver adaptation as well, just like splicing.
Fassbender's Jamie Oliver.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So after that, they film the final film in the franchise. Is they're adapting Foolproof by Mary Berry. This is all my mum's cooking shelf.
Okay.
And so they're filming Foolproof, and Maggie Smith's like, "Okay, well, which fool do I know? Fool of a Toque." So she basically tracks down Billy Boyd and brings him to the Disney headquarters. And she tries like turning Billy Boyd into a sponge cake. So Bob Iger then has to sort of swing in again and stops her. And so the franchise basically turns into filming behind the scenes, Bob Iger stopping Mary Berry from turning various, sort of stopping Maggie Smith from misinterpreting like Mary Berry's book titles and saving the day. So Bob Iger becomes the cult sensation he was born to be. And then he, becomes the iconic sensation he was meant to be. And then basically like every single person produces Bob Iger t-shirts. So like we have Jack, everyone who worships Igerism, his new religion, Igerism, gets Bob Iger t-shirts, and he's the first person to colonize Mars. So, yeah, just by himself. No one's with him. You know, he's Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen. He's metaphysical like that. So, yeah, that is the Mary Berry franchise. I feel like that was terrible, but
I enjoyed it.
Haven't done a mystery pitch in ages, so my creative buds are a bit exhausted, perhaps, for lack of a better term. But yeah, there are pitches.
Wow, that's incredible.
I feel like, Bob Iger is an interesting one because we both actually worship him and really appreciate his work. So
I think he's a very interesting man, definitely.
So I guess in terms of a mystery pitch, it's all about how we do him justice and how we paint him in the light that he deserves to be painted in. Yeah. Carl, when we go on Schmodown one day, we're gonna really perfect these skills.
Yeah, gonna go going on skateboards, like skateboard over the desk.
Yeah, exactly. How often do they do the Schmodown tournaments?
They're quite frequent. They have breaks, but they've obviously had to stop the live shows because of lockdown. They're doing it all remotely now, but they're still making money from it, which is good, I guess, supporting all the creators and people go on it. All the creatives who have works had to be stopped due to... they're getting some really big names on it, like Kevin Smith's on it now, so...
Oh, fair. Oh, good for them.
Yeah, but... Yeah,
more power to them.
Do it, though, to be honest.
Yeah, sure.
And they've had a few other Star Wars Rebels voice actors as well have been on it, like Freddie Prinze Jr. was on it, so...
Oh, interesting.
Sam Witwer, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the whole Mystery Inc. gang on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we should, one of our episodes in the future, we should write a Scooby-Doo episode.
Oh, I'd love that, yeah.
Like, plan out who it's... It's old man Boris Johnson. God, the options are endless.
It's Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty.
Oh, dear. It's former Labour MP Chris Williamson. God, but this is endless, isn't it?
Yeah, there's so many other mystery fridge possibilities we can do in the future, and I look forward to doing every single one of them.
Every single episode. Jack and I were actually talking on the phone earlier about doing a 24-hour episode for charity to raise money or just for our enjoyment of it. So we'll get around to that at some point.
Yeah,
I can imagine 24 mystery pitches.
Yeah, I can imagine doing it. My girlfriend's asleep. She walks in and goes, "It's 4 a.m, shut up!" And just laughs.
Oh,
I can imagine us getting so bored of talking to her, we just watch a film and just start commentating on it.
Yeah, which is probably bound to happen. Like, half of it is just us watching
all seven Nightmare on Elm Street, then the remake, then Freddy vs. Jason.
All 11 Friday the 13th.
Here's the album Ride the Lightning by Metallica, and just have a musical break.
I mean, half of it would just be us watching the extended versions of The Lord of the Rings.
We could do it Sunday morning, and now live to St. Mark Church with Rob Byrne playing a sermon. And just have his sermon.
We'll be like power nap for about 20 minutes.
Oh, can you imagine? Like, we end up getting like a takeaway, and the takeaway guy comes on and starts talking. I'm sorry, we're having to talk and eat because we're really hungry.
I was just like muting our mics in between whoever's speaking.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I mean, what other things can we do?
I like the idea of the Tom Hanks Defense Force Variety Hour. We get people to come on and do like special talents, or like stand-up sketches, singing, a bit of everything.
Like nothing to do with film or TV.
Oh, yeah.
or Tom Hanks.
We'll take this live. We'll sponsor an open mic night at a local pub and just go galactic.
And conquer Mars.
Yeah, we end up getting so much money, I end up making the four members of Rage Against the Machine the next Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I like it. We can actually record Bills on Parade.
Guest vocal, guest guitar solo, Bill Pullman.
I would quite like to do a mystery pitch where we write a Stephen King book at some point.
Oh wow, that'd be incredible.
Or like, you know, to make up the kind of film that someone like Steven Spielberg would direct, or David Cronenberg.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, like it's much simpler, but you just think about the kind of films that they'd make.
I like the idea of just doing, like, so we can do, like, a film about a different band, for example, where we get, like, I know, Eric Andre plays Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine, which I can weirdly see working.
Yeah, now you mention it. I mean, I feel like he's a bit more... Eric Andre's a bit more, like, sort of, like, yeah, I mean, I guess his overt cheekiness might be a limiting factor. But you never know. I'm sure Zach De La Rocha has his cheeky moments as well.
Yeah, my I think, to be honest, storming the stock exchange is quite cheeky, to be honest. So,
extremely.
So my girlfriend had an idea. Instead of doing a mystery pitch, we do mystery script. We literally have to write a whole script as much as we can in an hour or something.
Oh, interesting. Or 24 hours. And that's what takes up our 24-hour version.
I just like the idea of us getting some of our friends and us doing like a whole film. I don't know, like we end up doing like Lord of the Rings where we all play a different character.
Well, like mystery pitch, but this time there's 300 of us in the studio.
Yeah, like a round robin, like come on quick, go
mystery pitch with literally all our friends.
Yeah.
From our entire like 26 years of existence.
Yeah.
like this is Daniel, like, you know, we went to nursery together. But he's back for one night only. Oh dear. Okay. Yeah. We'll do that. We'll find a way.
Lots of ideas.
Lots of ideas. If you have any comments on our mystery pitches or anything that you'd like to add or add an extra commentary, then please tweet us at Tom Hanks Defense, and we will get back to you.
Yeah, definitely. I do like the idea also that it's not like a mystery pitch, but we come prepared with our own story, but it's like based on an actual event, like how we'd make a film on an actual event.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's a really good one.
I've got my one already, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ooh, it's not like a global event, but I think it would work... I'll give you... It will work very well as an underdog story.
Interesting. Nice. Well, tune in next time for the next mystery pitch, whatever this may be.
Yeah.
After the many ideas that you've just heard. Thank you for listening, and we will be back next time with more Tom Hanks Defense Forcing.
Excellent. Thank you very much for listening. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.